The Purusha incarnation, lying on the causal ocean, is called the original Purusha in the material creations. And in his Virat form, in whom all the planets and their inhabitants live, he has many thousands of legs and hands. Purport. The first Purusha is Karanadakshayi Vishnu. The second Purusha is Garbhodakshayi Vishnu. And the third Purusha is Shirodakshayi Vishnu, in whom is contemplated the Virat Purusha, the gigantic form in which all the planets with their different developments and inhabitants are floating. So this is the purport I was assigned. It's about the Purushas. But ultimately, it's about the Supreme Being and his manifestations. Actually, I did a little research about the Purusha avatars. Not a great deal, but something. It's about the sequence of the creation, how this all came about. So it begins with Krishna, who is the first manifestation. This is from the Hyderabad lecture Prabhupada gave in 1972. He says, from Krishna, Baladev. From Baladev, Achaturvyuha with Sankarshan, Vasudeva, Sankarshan, Vasudev, Pradyumna, and Aniruddha. So there's four manifestations from Baladev. Then from Sankarshan, Narayana. So then Narayana is manifested, the four-armed Narayana from the Vaikuntha world. Then second Chaturvyuha. Now the second Chaturvyuha also comes from Sankarshan. And then from that second Chaturvyuha, the Purusha avatars, in other words, the manifestations of this worldly prison house, this material world, the one-fourth, or estimated as the one-fourth of unlimited. The Goswamis say some amazing things. Sometimes they talk about this, the total creation, and they divide it into three quarters and one quarter, three quarters spiritual world, one quarter material world. So it's like kind of like saying three quarters of infinity and one quarter of infinity. So it's really beyond us. But anyway, that's the way it's described by the Acharyas. And these three Purusha avatars, beginning with Karanadakshaya Vishnu, or who we call Mahavishnu. Then from him comes Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, the Vishnu of each universe. And then Shirodakshaya Vishnu, who serves as the Supersoul within the heart. And it's within the heart of every living being. In fact, it pervades everything. Everything is pervaded by the Lord in his form as Shirodakshaya Vishnu. So it's interesting because many times in what we sometimes refer to as Hinduism, Prabhupada didn't like the term, but we're stuck with it to some degree. He didn't like Hinduism. He said, no, you should say something else. Sometimes he would say Varnashram Dharma, or sometimes he would say, what are the other terms he used? Anyway, huh? Sanatan Dharma sometimes, but of course that's misused as well. Some people say Sanatan Dharma and they mean some kind of weird form of Hinduism. Which, you know, is not necessarily accurate. The thing is, because there's so many conceptions about Vishnu, some people think that Vishnu is the original being, or Narayan, Lord Narayan, four-armed Vishnu. They think this is the source, this is the source. Well, we have a great acharya in our line called Jiva Goswami, and he wrote a book. He wrote six sandarbhas, and one of them was the Krishna sandarbha. And in that sandarbha, he establishes through very elaborate Shastric proof, logic, and argumentation, but fully Shastric. And the way he proceeded through, I tried to read the whole Krishna Sandarbha last night, couldn't do it, so I just stuck with the first book, the first chapter, which I brought along. This is Sujiva Goswami, Sri Krishna Sandarbha. Anyway, he goes through a very elaborate description, and he raises all the objections to this verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam. Anybody know what it's going to be? Huh? Louder. Ete changsa kala pungsa krishnastu bhagavan shayam indrari vyakulang lokang mridyante yuge yuge. Now this verse, he goes through a very esoteric and a full description of all the Sanskrit implications of this verse, all the other verses that support it, all the verses that appear not to support it, and defeats them one after the other. So if you ever want to know why we say that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, aside from it being Lord Chaitanya's opinion, there's also a firm Shastric basis for the whole thing. So the translation of that verse is, all of the above-mentioned incarnations are either plenary portions or portions of the plenary portions whenever of the Lord. But Lord Sri Krishna is the original personality of Godhead. All of them appear on planets whenever there is a disturbance created by the atheists. The Lord incarnates to protect the theists. So this is the verse which the whole Krishna Sandarbha rests on this foundation. In fact, the whole of Gaudiya philosophy, Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy, rests on these assertions. There's a little description in an old issue of Back to Godhead where some people had studied the Krishna Sandarbha, and they gave a little bit of a summary. And here's that summary. It goes like this. There's something, when you begin a discussion of something with deep implication, you start with what they call a Paribhas Sutra, which means a sutra which establishes the foundation or the ground upon which you're going to base everything else you say. So that's called a Paribhas Sutra. So it says here, what kind of a sutra is it? When a topic is unknown, and when then a sutra makes it known, the sutra is called a Paribhas Sutra. Up until this verse, nothing has been said about who is Swayam Bhagavan. But now Vyas says, Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam. This is a perfect Paribhas Sutra. A Paribhas Sutra is supposed to be universally applicable. It doesn't get repeated within the same text because its universal application is understood. That's why Vyasadeva did not repeat the sutra that says that Krishna is Swayam Bhagavan. Whenever the Paribhas Sutra and any other statement are in conflict, Radha Gokula Ananda Shri Jai. Whenever the Paribhas Sutra and any other statement are in conflict, we must accept the Paribhas as superior. The Paribhas statement is always supreme. In fact, Srila Jiva Goswami says that if a statement doesn't agree with the Paribhas Sutra, we must either reject that statement or interpret it. So this Paribhas Sutra is like a ruling king whom all others have to obey. If they don't obey, then it is our duty to make them obey. So this is the background of Jiva Goswami's proclamation. That Krishna, everything begins with Krishna in the spiritual dimension. And from him, all the other incarnations are described in this way. They're all avatars. But they're avatars with different purposes and appear in different places. So So this is a description from this, from the Hyderabad description, from Krishna, Baladev, from Baladev, Chaturvyuha, Sankarshan, Vasudev, Pradyumna, Aniruddha, then from Sankarshan, Narayana, then the second Chaturvyuha, from the second coming from Sankarshan, the Purusha avatars who are being described in this verse. So that's, now, screen? Do we have a screen? Now, that's all I'm going to say about this particular Oh, don't tell me. Oh, no. I appear to. Oh, no. I forgot something. Okay. Can you scroll down to the bottom? That's where I left it. Not yet. Oh, dear. It should say BSST. B-S-S-T. And then it says on Gorka Shore.
Yeah, this one.
Yeah, on Gorka Shore, yes. And then you start a slideshow. Oh, can you expand that? See, I was hoping that would be on a screen, but okay. I don't think people are going to be able to read that. Is that the only way we do it now? They don't have a regular screen.
Change from here like this.
Are you going to read it? Okay. Well, now I got to figure read it.
You want to manage what you want?
Now, if I want to, just go to the next slide. Okay, go back to the beginning. Now, what I'm doing today is Gorkhasura Das Babaji Maharaj's disappearance day. He was the spiritual master of, as you know, or at least I hope you know, of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And they had a very unique relationship because Gorkhasura was more or less a illiterate, a very strange acting person. He lived for almost 20 years in Vrindavan, and his main service was that he used to collect firewood and bring it to the different temples, you know, for the worship of the deity. And he also worshipped some beautiful deities of Radha and Krishna for about 20 years. And then he heard some stories about Bhaktivinoda's discovery of the birthplace of Lord Chaitanya. And he wanted to find out more about it. So he came and took up residence in a dharmshala. Or he lived in different places, but sometimes he lived in a dharmshala. Sometimes he lived on what they call a sand spit, which means a part of where the Ganges stops flowing and there's just a big sand area. He would sometimes just live in a place like that. He used to eat only rice. When anybody would offer him anything else, he would say no, it would create too much agitation. And so he would eat only rice, or if nothing was available, he would eat mud, Ganges mud. There are so many stories about this course, it's hard to know. But what I've done is I've gathered together some things that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur directly said about him, observations he made. When he first showed up at Bhaktivinoda Thakur's ashram, he was wearing a tiger skin cap that his spiritual master had given him. He's a very unusual person. You just have to remember he's an extraordinary person. Wearing a tiger skin cap, and he had some pieces of knotted rope, and he had some of the songs of Narottam Das Thakur that he carried with him. So Bhaktivinoda Thakura introduced Bhaktisiddhanta, his son, to Gaur Kishore. And Gaur Kishore immediately gave the tiger skin cap to Bhaktisiddhanta. He gave him some pieces of knotted rope and gave him some instructions about chanting, and then he went on his way. Now, Bhaktisiddhanta describes himself, now this is not to be taken exactly literally, but he describes himself as a very pious person, very high ideals in piety, but that he didn't really understand how you could practically be a fully Krishna-conscious devotee. It was a mystery to him at this point. So I wanted to read some of the statements of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur about his spiritual master, some stories also. I'll read these sections. I was hoping, what is that other microphone? Maybe we can get different people to read it. Who can see it? Well, I'll read the first one, and then we'll try to set up for the others. He says, I have been busy within this material world trying to bring sense gratification within the grasp of my hand. I have often thought, because it would be ideal if somebody had a really nice English accent, but anyway, I only have a not very nice accent, but anyway, I have often thought that by obtaining the objects of sense gratification, all my shortcomings will be fulfilled. I often attained different facets that were very rare indeed, but my own personal shortcomings were never mitigated in this material world. In this material world, I have had the association of very aristocratic persons. However, seeing their various deficiencies, I could not offer them praise. The most merciful Supreme Lord, Sri Gaurasundara, seeing me in such a lamentable condition at a time of adversity, gave permission to his two dearmost devotees, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Srila Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj, to grant their blessings to me. Someone can read the second part. Got the microphone handy? If you can want it. Yeah, you speak. You got a nice voice. Do you need to come? Or can you see it from there?
Yeah, just okay. Because I was always intoxicated with a worldly false ego and the desire for name and fame, I deprived myself of my own real benefit. But because of the influence of my previous birth's activities in devotional service, I came into the association of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who is my spiritual well-wisher. My spiritual master, Srila Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj, would go and visit Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur and many times would reside with him. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, out of his compassion for other living entities, pointed out my spiritual master, Srila Gaur Kishore Das Babaji. Upon seeing my spiritual master, the extent of my worldly false ego diminished. I knew that all the other living entities who have taken the human form of life were also fallen and low like myself. But by gradually observing the spiritual character of my master, I realized that only a Vaishnava could reside in this material world and be of exemplary character.
Thank you. So this is Bhaktisiddhanta is taking a quite a humble position, you might think, but this is actually his actual feeling. This is how he felt about himself, that he didn't have a clue. Basically, he's saying, I didn't have a clue until I met my spiritual master. Now, it may be hard to understand because he was highly learned from a very young age. In fact, he used to be able to recite all the verses from Bhagavad Gita at the age of, I think it was 8. All the verses, some people say 6, but no, it was 8 actually. But he could explain them all as well. So he was a very elevated person. Lots of people would like to have had him as a disciple. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and so you'd think Bhaktivinoda Thakur would have linked him up with some great scholar? No. He just pointed out, this is your spiritual master. More or less, in so many words, he said, this is your spiritual master. So then he began to approach him. Anyway, I'm going to go on. This was Bhaktisiddhanta's estimation of himself. Who's got the microphone now? Govinda, you read this one if you can.
When out of false ego, I was thinking, I am a great scholar of mathematics and philosophy. Let any big pundit come at any time, day or night, and I will cut his propositions to pieces. At that time, I got the darshan of the lotus feet of Sri Gurudev. He ignored everything that was previously appreciated in me, my truthfulness, my moral and pious life, and my intellectualism, knowing them to be of little value. When I saw that he ignored whatever was good in me, I realized how good he himself must be who could neglect so many good qualities in me. What inconceivable wealth he possessed.
Now, at this time, Bhaktisiddhanta was renowned as a great scholar of astronomy and astrology, and so much so that he defeated the chair of astronomy at the college in Calcutta. And, you know, he was already had a tremendous reputation at a very young age as a scholar. And, you know, very considered to be quite elevated, very pious, you know, no question of any deviation. He was a celibate from birth. He never transgressed the vow of celibacy. So these are the way he's characterizing himself in this particular section. So I'm going to move on to another one. So who's got it now? You can read.
Being neglected by him, I understood that there was no one more fallen and contemptible than myself. That was my actual identity. The very things that I adjusted, sorry, that I had judged.
Desiderata.
Desiderata.
Means things that are important or valuable, yeah.
Such as scholarship and upright character. This exalted soul regarded as valueless. I apprehended that within himself, this noble personality possessed priceless treasure. I then pondered that either he is extremely puffed up or is exceedingly merciful. I then haughtily said to my Gurudev, "You are a worshipper of that cheetah and debauch Krishna. So why would you become passionate to someone like me? Dedicated to ordinary morality."
Actually, that's a misprint. It should be compassion.
I thought that was the case.
Yeah. Compassion.
Okay, I'll read it again. So why would you become compassionate to someone like me, dedicated to ordinary morality?
He was upset. Apparently, he says he said it, so we have to take his word for it, that he approached Gaurakishore for initiation. And Gaurakishore said, "Oh." At one point he said, "I once had a disciple, but he didn't follow my instructions, so I'll not make any more disciples." So then he became more determined to ask him and pursue him to kind of make him and give him initiation. And at one point he got kind of emotional, apparently, and then said, "You are a worshiper of that cheater and debauch Krishna." It doesn't mean that he thought that Krishna was a cheater or a debauch, but some people thought of Krishna that way. And so he was repeating a common sentiment and said, "So what you're interested in is transcendental ecstasy, and I know I'm just dedicated to ordinary morality. So you're not interested in having me as a disciple." So he was feeling sorry for himself a little bit, apparently. And I'm always saying apparently because this is Leela between two great souls. But these were his sentiments anyway. So I'll go to another one. Okay, go CJ.
"Humbly and sincerely, I pray to the Supreme Lord for his mercy. Later, by his grace, I recognized that without receiving the blessings of this peerless saint, and without serving him, nothing good could happen to me. When I accepted that and acted accordingly, and then received the causeless, unlimited grace of my Sri Gurudev and refuge at his lotus feet, I deemed life fulfilled, deemed my life fulfilled.
Yeah. So he pursued him until he actually was in tears at one point because Gaura Kishore was so reluctant to accept him. But he finally agreed to give him initiation and gave him the name Srivarshanavanavi Devi Dayata Das. A nice name referencing Srimati Radharani. Someone who's got it now? Somebody else? How about on the ladies' side? Who wants to read? Come on, we want volunteers.
I had considered my Gurudev to be an equal in Vairagya, but somewhat short of learning. But he reduced to powder my audacity, born of book learning. With the mallet of his mercy, he revealed that whatever I had adjudged to be the highest ideal was in fact the most low and despicable. When by his grace that instruction first entered my ears, my diminutive brain lacked the capacity to accommodate such transcendental knowledge. But to all fools like me, he gave the chance to hear such lofty topics.
So this is an early impression that Gaura Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj was very renounced. How could you argue it? He lived off the rags that were left at the crematorium ground. I mean, he was wearing, that's the cloth of Gaura Kishore Das Babaji, that he used to go to the crematorium grounds where the rags that were covered the corpses before they were burned, he would collect them and turn them into his garments. And as I said, he would only eat rice, and sometimes he didn't eat at all, or he ate Ganges mud. So there was no question about how renounced he was. But he was thinking, but he's illiterate, practically. He doesn't know much. So Bhaktisiddhanta says, with the mallet of his mercy, he revealed that whatever I had adjudged to be the highest ideal was in fact most low and despicable. In other words, he was still thinking in terms of piety, pious behavior, pious activity. But Gaura Kishore was on a different plane of eternal service to Radha and Krishna. He was on a different platform, utterly on a different platform. And when Bhaktisiddhanta began to realize that this is way beyond what I had formerly thought, then he began to realize that this is the person that is meant for me to associate with and understand things from. So we'll go to the next. Another reader, go ahead.
It was my providential dispensation that I was able to fully understand the language and practical side of devotion after I had met the practicing master. I won't attempt that. No education could have prepared me for the good fortune of understanding my master's attitude. Before I met him, my impression was that the writings of the devotional school could not be fully realized in a practical life in this world. My study of my master and then the study of the books, along with the explanations by Thakura Bhaktivinoda.
Thakura Bhaktivinoda, yeah.
Thank you. Gave me ample facility to advance towards true spiritual life. Before I met my master, I had not written anything about real religion. Up to that time, my idea of religion was confined to books and to strict ethical life. But that sort of life was found imperfect unless I came in touch with the practical side of things.
In other words, how do you become a Vaishnava where you're completely absorbed all the time in worshipping Krishna? He's saying he didn't think it was a practical thing until he met Gaura Kishore, who was constantly chanting. I know that Prabhupada had a godbrother I was fortunate to meet in India, Krishnadas Babaji Maharaj, who was a Babaji. And he had some of these similar characteristics, not so much the renunciation part, but he constantly chanted. And any philosophical question you ask him, he would answer, chant Hare Krishna. No matter what question you ask, no matter how complicated. Except one time I asked him, you know, and you didn't know how he was going to receive your questions, because usually he would just start laughing, because he considered your questions to be sort of funny. He's always going to give the same answer. It's kind of what he indicated. So I asked him, I said, well, when we read about the lives of these great souls, I said, and then we measure ourselves against their consciousness and ours, I said, I just get discouraged. And he looked at me, and usually he'd only laugh into whatever you asked him, but this time he looked very serious, and he looked a bit dark. I mean, when I say dark, I mean he looks kind of a scowl on his face. And then he shouted at me really loud. He said, give up bad association. And then he said it two more times. He said it three times. So I was pretty blown away by that, because I wasn't sure who was the persons I was associating with. But later, when I thought about it, I concluded that it was my mind that he was speaking to. Bad association. The mind can be very bad association at times. Anyway, that's a little bit of an aside. But here we see the profound effect, as we go through these, have the profound effect that Gorkhashwarta's Babaji Maharaj had on Bhaktisiddhanta. He was very humble in the Gorkhashwarta's presence. Anyway, I'm going to go on. This is a nice one. We'll bring the microphone back over to the predominating beings over here. You want to read?
I have understood that if the people of this world do not receive the same jolt that I received from my Gurudev, then the consciousness will not awaken. Therefore, I am telling everyone, I am more foolish than anyone else on earth. Please, all of you, do not be foolish like me. Do not live your life within the limitations of calculating consciousness. Discuss Vaikuntha Katha and you will become a great person. I'm telling you what I have realized to be supremely beneficial.
So a very sweet and humble statement by Bhaktisiddhanta, that he's saying that the impact of a person fully absorbed in the love of God on him was very profound, very deep rooted. And this was his you could say, conclusion that don't be foolish. He's telling us all, don't be foolish. Don't be thinking about your advantages or disadvantages. Just discuss Vaikuntha Katha. In other words, be absorbed in the Shastra, be absorbed in chanting, be absorbed in spiritual practice. This is the only message these great persons really, truly have. It's very, very sweet sentiment, though, that he's actually, the person who is considered the greatest scholar of his day. Some people actually have compared him to Jiva Goswami, Bhaktisiddhanta. But the point was that Bhaktisiddhanta, this is how he thought of himself. And you get an insight into true humility from his remarks. Okay, go ahead.
On receiving a jerk of the lotus feet of Sri Gurudev, for the span of 1 year, I lost all sense of this external cosmos. I do not know whether any transcendental agent equal to him has ever appeared in this plane. How may those who are preoccupied with worldly lust, anger, and so on ever know him?
Okay. Now he cites some things that his spiritual master said to him. Anybody?
My Gurudeva mercifully told me, reject your knowledge, purity, and aristocracy, and come close to me. Don't go anywhere else, whatever you require, as many rooms, houses, palaces, and mansions, as much as scholarship, skills, self-control, and renunciation, you will get. Simply come close to me. Let there be a house, let there be an entrance, let there be learning. Do not become enamored by this type of thinking. Do not consider as necessities that which ordinary people accept as such.
This is kind of a slightly mysterious statement. But Bhaktisiddhanta is repeating what his guru told him, and which was essentially, you spend your time in association with me. And whatever else you desire to expand this preaching movement, whatever else you want, it'll come automatically. So this was his instruction. And he said this kind of thinking about gaining material objects or material facilities. He says, let there be a house, let there be an entrance, let there be learning. Do not be enamored with this kind of thinking. In other words, don't think about stuff. Just pray to Krishna. Just worship Krishna. These things will automatically come about. But you have to have good association so that you'll be thinking in the right way. So this is another nice statement. Now here's another humble description that he gives. Someone? I don't want to cause panic. It's okay to read. Go ahead.
I was a fearsome debater, but with great kindness, my Gurudev kicked out my pride in debating. Even in unlimited millions of lifetimes, I will not be able to find the limit of his compassion, nor will anyone else be able to do so. Although I am unfit, he recognized me as his servant, thus fulfilling my cherished desire by which I may live forever.
So this is the thing. His whole reputation had been built on his expertise as a debater. You know, he had debated so many people who claimed to be logicians and philosophers, and yet there was a certain level of, he's ascribing to himself at least a certain level of pride in that ability. Just like some people, you know, if they become very learned, they develop a little pride about it. They start to think, I'm pretty fantastic. I remember when I first learned a few verses when I was early on in Krishna consciousness, I was thinking, I'm becoming really advanced. I know these verses by heart. Well, I found out some other things as I got older. But there is a tendency when you accumulate knowledge to exhibit pride or have the sensation of pride. So here, he's saying that he kicked out my pride in debating, kicked it out. Now, how do you think he kicked it out? You can speculate. How did he kick out that pride, do you think? Go ahead. Someone who's got the microphone. Yeah, you have to give it up if you're not going to answer. Govinda, come on, you know.
Well, if he was, his guru gave him something so much higher, so automatically he lost his pride in the lower stuff because he saw it as just low.
Yeah, that's a good answer. I mean, he was experiencing that higher taste that we read about in Bhagavad Gita. But also, by his living example, he didn't bother. When Gorgashwar was challenged by anybody, he would just ignore them, usually. Or he would answer them in such a way that they didn't even know what the answer meant. He was very kind of transcendentally deceptive in that way. But he, in other words, he was so inspired by him that he lost interest, as Govinda is saying, he lost interest in debating. He didn't need to debate anymore. He knew what the correct answer was. He knew the answer. And he didn't want to waste time arguing with people. So, Here's another one. We're back over to this side now. No, be shy.
His renunciation was not limited.
Don't go fast. Go slowly.
His renunciation was not limited to abstaining from wealth and women, kanaka kamina vairagya, or from the desire for recognition, pratishtashta vairagya. I wish to worship a person who did not have even a single disciple. With such a desire, I had approached him, remained close to him, and begged for his mercy. He said, I once accepted a disciple, but he received me and left. I will not have another one. I was quite hurt, but I made a firm vow. Let him see how many times I'll be refused. Without receiving his mercy, I will not roam around in the world anymore.
Yeah. So this was... So he had... he's saying there weren't the ordinary limits to his renunciation or the desire for recognition. Of course, these things are very powerful in the material world. First of all, it's difficult to be renounced. People want sense gratification. That's why they're in this world. And so far as the desire for recognition, that's a very tough one to get past, even for Vaishnavas. Even for Vaishnava Praya, those who are trying to be Vaishnavas. This desire for recognition, for what we call it, PAD, profit, adoration, and distinction. Especially the adoration and distinction desire is very strong. So here he's saying, let me see how many times he'll refuse me. In other words, he became so determined to take him for a spiritual master, that this was his sentiment. Okay, who's got it? Next volunteer? There must be another one, yes.
My spiritual master explained to me, the ideal you are searching for is not your actual ideal. I thought that the renunciation of my spiritual master was indeed unmatched, but his learning seemed somewhat deficient. But he pulverized my false pride of bookish knowledge with the hammer of his mercy. He let me know, your highest ideal is actually the lowest. When I received his mercy and his message entered my ears, my tiny brain was not able to retain this divine knowledge, but he would bless all the foolish people like me with the opportunity to hear the highest message.
So this is a repeat of an earlier translation. This is a different, slightly different translation, the same section. This next part that's in several parts, which I'm going to read this time because otherwise, you know, I want to make sure. I don't know what time we're allotted here. Is it 9 o'clock? It's a codicil, of course, so you won't be eating, right? At what time does that start?
9 o'clock.
Okay, well, I think we'll get through everything. Here we go. At some point, one of the prominent kings in Bengal, who was also maintaining me, came to know about my spiritual master's preeminence. This king was the king of Tripura, Maharaj of Tripura. And the king came to invite my spiritual master to his palace, insisting that he join an assembly of other devotees maintained by him. After hearing the king's humble and desperate request, my spiritual master replied, now this is Gaur Kishore speaking now, if I go to live at your palace, it will seem that this was my desire. Your relatives will consider me a shareholder of your wealth and will file a lawsuit against me. But I have no capacity for litigations. Therefore, it is better that you come to the bank of the Ganga in this holy dham to live with me and worship Lord Hari without any worries. I will build a straw roof for you and will go begging to take care of your food and clothing. By entrusting all of your possessions to the managers of your estates and by desisting from sense gratification, you will be able to become a Vaishnava. In that case, if I will be invited to a feast in the courtyard of a Vaishnava, I will be obliged to respond. But if I accept your invitation today and leave this transcendental abode of Gaura to go and live at your palace, I will very soon adopt the mentality of a king and may become busy in amassing large tracts of land and numerous objects of sense gratification. As a result, in a few days, my desire for worshiping Lord Krishna will be dissolved in my thirst for sense objects, and I will be counted among those envied by the king. Conversely, if you build another kutir next to mine, engage in bhajan, and live your life by begging, we will never be deprived of mutual affection and will not envy each other. So he countered the invitation of the king with his own proposal that the king come and live with him like a renunciate, and that he would make sure that he had the Bengali term, but it means a boat cover. So he was going to get the king a boat cover, which was often what Gorgashwar lived under, a boat cover, and he would beg food for him and make sure that he had whatever he needed to live a life of renunciation. Anyway, it was just interesting. He says, if a king of your caliber who is friendly to Vaishnavas wants to show his mercy to me, then kindly accept this lifestyle of mine and worship Lord Hari. In this way, I will receive your mercy and we will become genuine close friends. So when the king heard this, it says, the Vaishnav king was stunned to hear my spiritual master's judgment. He could understand the difference between the character of the so-called Vaishnavas maintained by him and the character of this great soul. Intent on securing worldly gains from the king, those maintained by him would speak pleasant words, whereas my spiritual master was concerned about the king's actual welfare and would speak contrary to his pleasure. My Gurudev was completely desireless. He never asked anyone in this world for any favor. Let everyone sincerely worship Krishna. That was his only well-meaning desire. He knew that by far the greatest mercy was to engage everyone in activities aimed at the satisfaction of Lord Krishna's senses. He was convinced that approving of anyone's inclination for sense gratification and fanning the sacrificial fire of their own satisfaction was not mercy at all. In fact, it was the opposite, a frightening kind of violence. So in other words, he considered that if he encouraged an attitude of sense gratification in anyone, that was violence. So this is a very elevated sentiment, but perfectly in keeping with his outlook. He wanted to do good to everyone he met, but not by, you know, encouraging their sense happiness. He wanted to encourage them in those things which are important, especially chanting. Now, here's a kind of a description given by Bhaktisiddhanta about his general daily activities. So who's got the microphone now? Are you going to read? Go ahead.
My Reverend Gurudeva lived like a madman at various places on the bank of the Ganga near the town of Nodip. He completely gave up cooking and never accepted any eatables from materialists. He absolutely avoided accepting food and other kinds of hospitality from homes of wealthy sense enjoyers. Sometimes he would consume only soaked rice and other times only mud. He was often naked. Sometimes he would cover his body with clothes that were discarded after having been used to bring the dead to the crematorium ground. He would receive many edibles in charity. Many wealthy Grihastha Vaishnavas used to donate considerate amount of wealth, expensive shawls and other clothes. When he received money, he made a few knots on his clothes to keep it safe and gave an impression of being irritated. Foolish people fond of wealth used to think that he was greedy for money.
because he would take the financial donations, he would wrap them up in his cloth and look like he was a little bit irritated. It explains why in the next slide. Okay, pass it back over now, please. Maybe this wasn't a great idea to do, but I just thought it would be nice to involve everybody in it. Somebody take it on. You do it. You've got it. You do it.
If someone presented him expensive clothes, he would greatly glorify the donor and in this way make it known how insignificant the clothes were. He used to say, "I wasn't able to become a Vaishnava." He claimed that his visitors who gifted him these items were hoping that the gifts would be used by a Vaishnava, and therefore only Vaishnavas were entitled to being the recipients.
Okay, now I don't know if this is clear, but when people would donate valuable clothing and gifts, he would say, well, these sort of things should only be offered to a Vaishnava. And I'm not a Vaishnava, so I'll make sure that some Vaishnava will get these things. So go ahead and read the rest.
Therefore, he would often send all the collected donations to Vanamali Rai Mahashai and would insist on receiving a letter from him confirming that the gifts had been used in the service of the Vaishnavas. At the time, Vanamali Rai Mahashai was engaged in serving the Vaishnavas in Sri Vrindavan.
So this was the way he avoided the temptations of all these, all the money and all the ornaments and clothing that people would offer. He would see that the Vaishnavas in Vrindavan, where he'd spent the first 20 years of his life, would get these things. Okay, one more. I think it's just one more.
Even the most eminent renunciates of this world could not match even 100th part of his renunciation. In my master, the spirit of detachment of Srila Raghunath Das Goswami manifested itself fully. If his superhuman character and activities had been known, if my Guru Maharaj would have spoken about himself in a simple language, this entire world would have benefited. My spiritual master did not instruct us to merely give up women and wealth. He wanted us to renounce the pretense of being a sadhu as well. He was a Bhagavat Paramahamsa. The Dharma of Paramahamsas can never exist without the shelter of the Bhagavat Purana, the scripture of the Paramahamsas.
It's an interesting concept here. He talks about not just ordinary idea of renunciation, women and wealth, it says, or in your case, men and wealth. He wanted people to give up the pretense of being a great sadhu. In other words, if someone is taking pride in the idea that I'm a Vaishnava, sometimes you people, oh, he's a Vaishnava, with sort of awe in their voice. But even this idea, thinking like that, he didn't approve. He says, renounce the pretense of being a sadhu as well. In other words, don't get puffed up about your spiritual characteristics or your spiritual practices. Be a humble state of mind, just a servant. So this is the nature, this is our parampara, this sort of mentality, the whole emphasis on being a servant of the servant. That's the correct mentality. Okay, that's it. So I guess we have some time for, you want to take this? Anybody have any questions? Uh-oh, I didn't stimulate a single question. Oh, dear. Yes, go ahead. Govinda.
Thank you. It's interesting that he's illiterate, but he's carrying a book of Narottam Das Thakur.
Yeah, he could read the simple songs of Narottam, apparently, but they were written in very simple language, and he could just about manage those. But he called himself illiterate. He would sometimes cry out, apparently, please read to me from the Chaitanya Charitamrita and the Srimad Bhagavatam. I'm illiterate. I can't understand. And then they would answer, but whatever you say, it comes right out of those books. So he was very good at hearing. There was no obstacle to his hearing, and he used to go and he lived in a Godrum Dweep. There was a room where he used to stay when he would come and stay with Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And he could answer any question. Prabhupada mentions this, and it's also mentioned by Bhaktisiddhanta. Any philosophical question he was asked, he would immediately answer it and give a very perfect answer. So, how is it all possible? One time he came in the dead of night to be with Bhaktisiddhanta in the Janmasthan, Lord Chaitanya's Janmasthan. And at that time, there was no way to get to that place at night, especially at night. It was very difficult terrain, apparently. And so Bhaktisiddhanta said, how did you get here? How is it possible that you come here? He said, one person showed me the way. And Bhakti said, what person? Where is he? He was questioning him. And he said, just one person showed me. And Bhakti Siddhanta says that it was Krishna himself that had guided him, or Lord Chaitanya or Krishna. He was divided, given divine guidance. So very extraordinary person. Anything else, Chaitanya? You had a question, or I hope, or a comment? Oh, we got one. Chaitanya, could you let Sakshi ask his question, if you don't mind.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt your question. All the great sages and self-realized souls, they're all unique and they have a different style. And I was just thinking how Srila Prabhupada, when he answered questions, he'd always... he'd answer generally from different angles, but usually he'd give so many quotes from Shastra. Generally speaking, Prabhupada would back up his whatever answer. He'd back it with Shastra. I was just curious about Gaukashodas Babaji, if it's recorded, when he gave answers, he could give the answers perfectly, because he was fully realized. And I was wondering if his style, is it recorded whether he quoted Shastra or he was just sharing his deep realization and wisdom?
I've never read anything that explains exactly how he was able to do it and whether he used... I mean, whatever he spoke, because Bhaktisiddhanta was so knowledgeable, in Shastra, whatever he spoke, he would know, what was the foundation of that statement. He would be able to recognize it. Whether Gaukashodas required that even is not clear. It's not clear. But he could answer anything. The one story that just... I got to tell this before, until I'm told to shut up. He used to actually... In his internal lila, he would be serving Radha and Krishna in his mind. But sometimes it would start to go, or he would lose the focus on this particular pastime he was meditating on. And he would decide, there's no point in living. So he would enter the Ganges to drown himself. But then when he entered the Ganges, it would come back to him. And then he would be okay, then he wouldn't kill himself. Another time, Bhaktisiddhanta and Bhaktivinoda were trying to convince him because his eyesight was gradually going blind. He was going blind gradually. And They were trying to convince him to go to Calcutta and get some medical help. And he said, I won't do it. I'm not going to the material world, Calcutta. And so he actually ran away at one point and disappeared for some time. I think it was, they said, about a month. No one saw him. And then he came back and said, well, he said, I cannot achieve Krishna by suicide. He said, so, but I will not allow anyone to serve me. So he was very determined not to be served. You know, other times we see devotees are very eager to be served. They're very pleased to be served. But actually, the real pleasure is in service, and he didn't want to be obligated in any way. He wanted just to be of service to the Lord and the Lord's representatives. Okay.
You asked a question before about how was pride defeated. And it just strikes me that the humility and gravitas of Gokishor would be formidable. As you say, his humility was inconceivable. Along with that, with the gravitas that goes with it, seriousness, mm-hmm. in such person's presence, a bit like in Prabhupada's presence, you'd realize he's seeing you. And you have a fight or flee, or surrender. And in the case of Gokishor, it could be something like being in the presence of Prabhupada. But Prabhupada had a different mood. He was very...
Well, it was quite unpredictable sometimes how he would respond. But as you say, he was very grave. Sometimes he would get angry about people that were cheating. And he would say some very harsh words about persons that were cheating or being pretentious sadhus. He didn't have any patience with that. But anyway, my time is definitely up. Thank you all very much. Hare Krishna. Amen.